there, this is Jo McGarry. Welcome to our podcast. A little different from Radio Mojo, the radio show. The podcasts are meant to be a more private, more intimate, more in-depth look behind the scenes with our guests, and continuing to bring you the best of eating, drinking, and living in Hawaii. If you want to know more about what we do and our work specifically with restaurants and food clients, then you can go to our website, mojomcgarry.com, and this podcast can be downloaded through iTunes or any of the other places where you like to get your podcasts. Enjoy, and thanks for being with us. Well, it's that time of year where we start to talk about our favourite drinks. Champagne, of course, being the king and queen and probably everything else in between of all of them. The best person to talk to about champagne is Roberto Viernes. I'm sitting with him this morning. How are you?
Awesome. Thank you, Jo. Ready to talk about bubbles.
Now, I say that you're the best person to talk to about champagne, not just because of your authoritative position as a sommelier, but because you absolutely love it, don't you? I mean, you're actually very passionate about champagne.
Yes, very passionate about it. I visit Champagne once a year, at least. Visited many times, a dozen times or so. But it's just the celebratory nature of it. But not only that, it's the number one beverage associated with celebration, mm-hmm. of course, right? When you have a birthday, anniversary, any celebration, a christening for a ship, using bubbly champagne for it is, certainly the standard. But on top of that, champagne actually is a very gastronomic beverage. A lot of people like to put champagne kind of in pigeonhole where you should only have it before the dinner,
yes.
or maybe just as an aperitif. But champagne is so much more than that. As champagnes develop with age, they change so much over time, and they unlock all these unbelievable flavor profiles and nuances that no other wine has because of the secondary fermentation that happens in the bottle. So it's truly, as you said, I'm very, very passionate about it. And, there's just so much to talk about when it comes to sparkling champagne wine.
So really, for most people, we're doing champagne a disservice if we only have it, like, one bottle right before everyone sits down for dinner, mm-hmm. instead of saying, oh, we're having this champagne mm-hmm. with dinner. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you where I feel champagne has become a cloudy area for a lot of people. There are a lot of imitations. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, like, very cheap and nasty kind of, you know what I mean? There are things on the shelf uh-huh. that do not in any way give you a true taste of the magnificence of champagne. Mm-hmm. How do we get people to ignore them and go that to that absolute baseline where you need to start mm-hmm. appreciating champagne?
I think it's kind of like most other things. The value that you find in a wine isn't necessarily just how much you pay for it, right? Because you could pay, like $5 for a t-shirt, but is that t-shirt going to last you, a long time? Is it made with quality? Is it made with quality grapes from a quality producer? Mm-hmm. And generally, the answer to that for the wines that are, that lower end quality sparkling wines, typically the answer is no, because
right.
the sparkling wine process itself does require more, it's typically more labor intensive. It also requires more time than a regular wine because of the secondary fermentation process. So all of that involved does also add to the actual production cost in the champagne. So when people think about it in those terms, knowing that there's more craftsmanship, that there's more time involved in the product, that being going into the game knowing that you're going to have to spend a little bit more for something of better quality, I think is a really good start for people to start thinking about it. And it comes with, like anything, like whether you buy a cheaper style computer, or if mm-hmm. it's a quality clothing or any type of product, when you really want to get the best bang for your buck, you have to pay a little bit more for quality product. So that's the way to start it.
And at the holidays too, I think it's the best time to start splashing out and experimenting, mm-hmm. whether you're buying a gift or whether you're buying it just for home or mm-hmm. to take to your Christmas or New Year's party. Mm-hmm. And let's face it, no one wants to start off the new year with a kind of imitation bottle of champagne, right?
I've heard too many people say, oh, they had the worst hangover from the champagne. And I ask them, well, what champagne was it? And it comes out that it really wasn't champagne, mm-hmm. or it was some really, you know, not a really terrific champagne. Yeah, so
give everyone the qualifications for a bottle of champagne.
So champagne is not only a wine, but it's actually a region. So in order to be champagne, it must come from the Champagne region in France. It is a protected name. Its appellation is protected around the globe. So you can't just call something champagne because it's gone through the secondary fermentation process. There is, of course, one exception, and it's in California. Mm-hmm. I won't mention their names. Mm-hmm. But somehow they were grandfathered in before mm-hmm. the actual laws were put into place to protect the name champagne. Mm-hmm. But it is a region in France. It has to come from that region. It has to come from prescribed grape varietals that go into making champagne. The three main ones, of course, are Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, and Pinot Meunier. Mm-hmm. There are a few others, but they're very esoteric, and very few producers actually use them these days. But they're still very special. The second part of it is that the champagne must have a secondary fermentation process, which is what captures the sparkle in the wine, what makes that bubbliness inside the champagne. And it has to also have that secondary fermentation in the same bottle that it's sold in. Mm-hmm. So there are other cheaper processes that allow for sparkling wines, but it's not done necessarily in the same fashion as a bottle of champagne. And it also has to be aged for a minimum of 15 months prior to being released to the public. So no champagne producer can produce a champagne of quality, prior to 15 months old after the January 1st of the harvest, following the harvest that they've made for that year. So again, it's very, very quality oriented. The area that champagne is produced in is very, very unique. It's one of the most northerly wine growing district in all of France, and it has a very, very special quality soil that is found in that area too. It's a very, very specific chalkiness that's found in the three main growing region of Champagne, which makes Champagne very, very unique. And all of that combined is what truly makes a bottle of Champagne.
And what makes it so magical, right? Because there's nothing else that tastes mm-hmm. like opening a mm-hmm. bottle of champagne. No. And of course, women have played a great part in the production of champagne, haven't they?
Oh, totally, yes.
I mean,
yes.
More so than any other wine, really.
In many, that's definitely a very strong argument for that. I mean, you have women, extremely pioneering, strong women who took over businesses at an age and time where it was dominated by men. And this is, in the 1800s, mm-hmm. We're talking about women like Veuve Clicquot, Madame Clicquot Ponsardin. She was, of course, one of the most famous. Her name is, synonymous with quality now,
right.
with the champagnes of Veuve Clicquot. But also Madame Louise Pommery. Mm-hmm. Madame Pommery was very, very famous. In fact, she died a hero to the people in Reims because she allowed people to use their cellars. Pommery became an underground city when it was bombed in the Second mm-hmm. World War. And she served the entire city of Reims by allowing the community to build schools, churches, community centers, all underground in the cellars of Pommery.
Amazing story. I mean, those two women alone mm-hmm. are enough for like hours and hours of conversation. But yeah. I always like to just sort of gently throw that in mm-hmm. that for some reason, this magical, magical wine mm-hmm. might, one of them for sure, Veuve Clicquot, may mm-hmm. have been lost or not mm-hmm. continued in the way that it did if it hadn't been for a great, strong mm-hmm. woman.
Without question.
And today, of course, still one of the world's favorite champagnes. I have to say, of them all, mm-hmm. it's the one I return to over and over. Lots of them. How about for you in terms of, let's go, best taste you've ever had? There's something about the champagne that you don't forget, right, when you have the sip. So what was that one where you just went, oh my God?
Wow, that's a tough one, Joe, because I've had quite a few.
Yeah.
If I had to choose, one single house that probably gave me the most pleasure mm-hmm. and the most aha moments, it'd be without question Champagne Krug. So Krug Champagne, K-R-U-G, is certainly the connoisseur's choice. Mm-hmm. It is a luxury champagne. The Grand Cuvée, which is their what some would call their entry-level champagne, is already a tête de cuvée. I mean, they don't make anything less than a Grand Cuvée. And those champagnes, for me, have always been unbelievably great. To mention one and one alone is a
impossible.
Really hard one. But
because it's also to do with the event, where you're drinking it, mm-hmm. who you're with. Yeah. I understand all of that.
Yeah.
Okay, so Krug, if it had to be sort of...
Yeah, if I had to choose one... Yeah, if one... Just one champagne house, it would uh-huh. have to be Champagne Krug. And for me, you know, one of the standout moments, and the one that I remember vividly all the time, we had the bottle in France. Actually, it was in Burgundy, and the cellar master there, he had a bottle of 1979 Krug Clos du Mesnil. And Clos du Mesnil is a single vineyard that Krug owned, and their first vintage and production of that wine was in 1979. And it was the very first vintage, and that wine, I can still taste it to this day. Mm-hmm. It was unlike any other champagne I had ever tasted. It was so unique. It's 100% Chardonnay, 100% Grand Cru. But what was unique about it was that the house, Krug actually purchased the vineyard site in 1973, but it was very dilapidated. The vines were not well taken care of. So they actually had to replant it. They pulled up the vines and they replanted it in 1976. And 1979 was, the vines were still very, very young. It was only on its third leaf. Mm-hmm. And yet to this day, many of the Champagne Cognoscenti still consider 1979 Krug Clos du Mesnil as one of the great
wow.
champagnes in the century. Just an amazing, amazing testament to the quality of that particular vineyard and the quality of the winemaking of the House of Champagne Krug.
So that's amazing. A memorable one for
oh,
sure.
Amazing, amazing.
Roberto, how can we help enhance the holidays for people listening? Give us some tips to go shopping, to buy some champagne that will really stand mm-hmm. out and make particularly, I think, Christmas Eve, New Year's Eve mm-hmm. sort of memorable.
Well, one of my other favorite houses is actually Champagne Louis Roederer. Mm-hmm. The Champagne Louis Roederer was started back in the early 1800s, and it was actually started in 1776, the same year that the United States was born. So it was a pretty, pretty cool connection. But their Champagne Louis Roederer's Brut Premier is one of my favorite house champagnes, because the style of the champagne house has this wonderful elegance and richness at the same time. It has this wonderful, you know, beautiful citrus, even flowery notes, and it has that kind of base notes of like tamarind and orange, and it has this wonderful elegance. It's a very, very, very elegant style of champagne. And for me, as a starter level, the Brut Premier from Champagne Louis Roederer is an excellent, excellent mm-hmm. value, because it's, you know, the retail price is around, you know, $40 a bottle, but you are getting something that you know is much better than that price point. It's really classy, elegant, and very complex. It's really one of the best non-vintage champagnes on the market right now. Really special.
And would that be one that you would say, let's drink that with dinner, let's have that New Year's Day with dinner mm-hmm. as we're sitting down for, you know, whatever the choice is for New Year's
Absolutely.
Day?
Absolutely. As we were talking about earlier, you know, champagne is not just for an aperitif or, you know, just to start a meal or to start a celebration, but you can actually drink champagne throughout the meal. And what's really special about champagne is that as the bubbles start to dissipate, a lot of people think, you know, it's only about the bubbles, but it's not only about the bubbles. As the gas starts to dissipate, the wine becomes a still wine. Mm-hmm. And when you start drinking it, you'll start to notice more nuances inside of it when all the bubbles are actually gone. So you'll start to see more complexity in the wine. And as I mentioned, being a blend of Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and Pinot Meunier, you'll start to get nuances of those different grape varietals. So you'll get that beautiful apple and pear character from the Chardonnay. But then you'll start to get some red fruit character from the Pinot Noir and the Pinot Meunier, which really is a wonderful thing when it comes to food. And on top of that, it is a wonderful, has a wonderful acidity to it. Champagne already has a beautiful acidity to it, so it goes really, really well with things that are from the sea, you know, mm-hmm. things that, you know, need a little squeeze of lemon on top of it. Any shellfish, like oysters, clams, mussels, any type of seafood as well goes really, really well with. And when you have richer styles of champagne, you can even go to things that as heavy as even pork chops, or even roasted chicken with deeper, richer styles and more and aged styles of champagne, which is really, really wonderful pairing.
So very complex, yeah. and very yeah. good to sit down and let it develop as mm-hmm. you're enjoying your holiday meal. Mm-hmm. And I think nothing better than in Hawaii, New Year's Eve, champagne, mm-hmm. seafood. We all have seafood on our table. Couldn't yep. be New Year without
yeah.
it.
Yeah, always have sashimi on the platter, you know, sushis, and, you know, a lot of seafood around, for sure.
So we're just a few days away, really, from starting full-on celebrations. Mm-hmm. Is there a moment where you... I think for all of us, we realize it is impossible to have a glass of champagne without feeling happy, celebratory, mm-hmm. and relaxed. Mm-hmm. Yep. I can't think of another beverage that has the same effect on people. yeah. Is there a point where you pop open a bottle and go, okay, the holidays are starting?
6 p.m. New Year's Eve. Christmas Eve. Christmas Eve, 6 p.m. It's a... Friends and I, we years ago, we came up with this the 6 o'clock champagne rule.
Oh, cool!
It's 6 o'clock is when the champagne is opened, and 6 p.m. on Christmas Eve is when that's going to happen.
The so holidays begin. Somehow I yeah. knew you would have a moment that the holidays began. Roberta, thanks so much for sharing all that information with us. My it's always pleasure. Such a pleasure to chat with you. Have a wonderful Christmas.
Thank you,
and a happy
too.
New Year.
Merry Christmas.
Hey, welcome back to our Radio Mojo podcast. I hope everything is great with you. So we're continuing our theme of celebrating and drinking beautiful things, and I thought it would be perfect to chat with Dave Power, who's a beer specialist at Southern Glazer's Wines and Spirits and who knows much about celebrating with beers. How are you, Dave?
Good morning, Joe. Nice to see you again.
It's a lovely time of year, isn't it? Because it's that little period between the holidays, gearing up to a new year. But it's almost like there's an excuse, like, hourly to toast something or meet with friends.
For sure. It's always, definitely people are always out and about and there's a reason to get together.
So Christmas traditionally is a time when beers were created. I mean, partly because it was winter, right? And so people would make beers and drink beers in the winter. And if you come from European countries like me, it's very dark in the winter. There's hardly any daylight. All of that contributes to drinking more and wanting to celebrate more and wanting to be warmer. Is it still a time when breweries release celebration ales, Christmas ales?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like you said, there's a reason to drink, and if there's a reason to drink, people are going to make things to drink for those reasons. You know, so Christmas beers, holiday beers, winter beers, bigger, darker beers, and beers that go with the food that we eat during the holidays. You know, turkey and stuffing and gravy are great with those sort of darker European brown ales and dark ales.
Is it a little intimidating for people in Hawaii? Because, I mean, yes, it's Christmas, but no, it's not dark, it's not cold, the nights are not drawing in. It's still really warm. I mean, it's, you know, going to be 80 degrees today. Is it intimidating for people to walk into a store and look at something very dark? That look, because dark beer, people just think heavy, malty alcohol, right? None of those things necessarily are true, but they think that. Do you think it's a harder time of year to buy beer?
Well, I don't know. I think it's a great time. You know, sometimes if you're buying an expensive beer just to try it, you know, and you're at home after, you know, a long week, work week or whatever, that could be a little more intimidating than you're celebrating a beer that might be a little more than you normally would spend, but you're sharing it with some friends and you're all going to try it together. And that sort of like bringing people together, or one more reason to bring people together, one more experience to share during the holidays, in a lot of ways is freeing this time of year.
Well, there you go. That's a much better way to look at it, rather than looking at all those beers that don't usually appear on the shelves. Tell us some of your particular favorites at this time of year and some that people can go and grab with certainty.
Well, I mean, you talked about those European, darker European beers. A really easy one is Samuel Smith's Nut Brown Ale. Sort of that, talk about turkey and stuffing and gravy, that's kind of the perfect beer for that. But I kind of like going towards some bigger barrel-aged beers because it is a little bit cooler. Maybe at night it's a little bit cooler, not in the afternoon today.
a little bit cooler.
But I think, yeah, you get some, there's some phenomenal, interesting beers from Northern California that are in available from Truckee, from 5050 Brewing Company called Eclipse, which is a barrel-aged, award-winning Imperial Stout. That's astonishing and available in a few places, but one of those great beers to share with people. Maybe again, a little bit intimidating price-wise, but not so much when you're sharing it with some friends.
What are the characteristics of, you know, we're talking about darker beers and maltier beers and Christmas ales because we're familiar with them, but for somebody who's kind of coming to this for, you know, the first time, or for somebody who wants to buy a gift for somebody and make it really special, what can we expect from a Christmas beer? Or, you know, the Samuel Smith, I think, is just such a great ale. It's been around for, I mean, God, centuries, right? Almost. I mean, it's been around for a really long time.
Oldest brewery in England.
Yeah. So what should we expect when we open a bottle?
Well, I think you're going to see it's going to be, how do I say this better? Typically, you'll have two ingredients that are adding flavor, for the most part. You're going to have malts, which can be anything from light, toasty biscuits, you know, like a Pilsner or a blonde ale, to really dark coffee chocolate notes. And those can be sometimes dry, and they can be sometimes sweet. And so typically in those darker beers, you're going to get, you know, those malts act, we treat them a lot like you treat coffee. So the darker you roast them, the more rich chocolate coffee, dark coffee flavors you're going to get. The less you roast them, the less of that. So you'll see things that are a little bit sweeter. I definitely kind of reach towards European beers this time of year, just because I think they are so food friendly and they're fun to share. And so much of the holidays are about tradition and, you know, things that have come along before us. Why not enjoy those things?
And you mentioned that people might be a little, maybe shocked by the price of some of these specialty beers that are around at Christmas. They shouldn't be, because what you're buying is something that's very special. It's not your sort of imported, you know, lager. There's a tradition with them. There's an added cost with them. What are we looking at, or what would you expect to pay for one of these specialty Christmas beers?
Well, I mean, they range quite a bit. You know, in the store, you'll probably see six packs from the, I don't know, $12 to $14 range up into maybe $20 a six pack. And then on individual beers, you know, it's a lot like anything. You can spend as much money as you have or want on some of these things. You know, a really rare, award-winning barrel-aged beer that has maybe a year or two of age on it might be approaching $30 for a large format bottle, which is, again, it sounds like a lot, but it's, you know, they're going to be high alcohol. You're not going to drink the whole bottle. I wouldn't advise you driving after drinking a whole bottle by any means.
Well, it's more like a bottle of wine. I mean, you should approach it that way, really. It's more like something that you will sip and enjoy and share. It's not like you're buying, you know, your six-pack to go home with.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can split it between four people, and it's about the same alcohol of a typical beer. And it's an experience that you're probably only going to drink it once. Or just like a great bottle of champagne, or, you know, any other reason to celebrate, there's lots of things out there to try.
And there's always memories associated with those times that you open something really special. I think you just don't forget them. You always remember, especially if you go out and look for something different. Now, here's something I wanted to ask you, Dave. So for some people, you know, for people going in for the first time to maybe experiment at Christmas, because it's an easy time to do that, right? It can be like a little bit overwhelming. I mean, it used to be you'd walk into a beer shop. There was a few beers. If you were really lucky, you had something that had been, you know, imported, and there was like five or six different things from Belgium. Now there's like hundreds of beers. We're sitting within a stone's throw of Village Bottle Shop, The Village, which has at any time about 300 beers that you can go in and buy. That can be a little intimidating.
It can be. But I would say that, by and large, when you go to places that have, like a Village, you know, their employees are so good about asking you questions or giving you tastes and letting you sort of experiment and find out what you like, and then steering you towards things that might be on the shelf that maybe you haven't had before. You know, I think we're exposed to so much of, even us sitting here talking about, you know, $30 barrel-aged beers that they might be amazing, but that isn't where no one has to start there. You know, you could just find a really great beer and share it with somebody. You know, ask your bartender what they normally drink. You know, get a taste of things. Figure out what you like. I think really if you can taste a couple beers and figure out what malty tastes like and what hoppy tastes like and figure out what you like in that realm. Like, do you like dark stouts that are coffee-like? Do you like bitter beers that are like IPAs? And then from there, you can really just start, you know, trying other beers and sort of like collecting those beers and sharing them with your friends. And it doesn't have to be intimidating at all. It's really, this is beer. This isn't high snobbery. This is, you know, everyone drinks beer. Everyone makes beer in the world. It doesn't have to be like that.
It's actually a fantastic time to be drinking beer. I mean, considering how far importing has come in America. I mean, if I think back 20 years or more, when I first came to Hawaii, the yearning for knowledge from people to get European beers here and the little that was on the shelves was quite extraordinary. So it is a really good time. And I think probably people who are of drinking age now don't even realize what went before to get all the great beers here and to have people like you guys as experts. I mean, there was no beer expert in all the different houses years and years ago, and now we have lots of them, which is awesome.
Yeah, no, I think I've said this on your podcast before, there's no better time to be drinking in Hawaii than right now. Like, it is really, we're living in the best times.
So. Yes, for many, many things. Dave, what will you be drinking this holiday season? What's your kind of go-to? And do you have any favorites that are tradition in your house that you couldn't have a holiday without?
Well, I don't know if I have any traditions in terms of beer. I think we're always trying new stuff, so you never know. If there's any tradition, it's probably champagne, like opening a bottle of bubbles. On New Year's Eve, my wife and I ate a frozen pizza, drank a bottle of champagne, and watched Die Hard. It was a pretty good highbrow, lowbrow evening, but really fantastic. There's... one of the ones that I think I do gravitate towards every year is Tom Kearns at Big Island Brew House makes a beer called the Red Sea of Cacao. And it's an imperial red ale, so it's a high alcohol red ale. Not that high, like 7% or so. But he puts cocoa nibs that he gets processed on the Big Island and pink peppercorns and sea salt into the beer. And it's this just fantastic... it always tastes festive. It only comes out this time of year. You know, when the pink peppercorns are in season in November, he picks the peppercorns, makes the beer, and then it comes out in December. And that's one of those beers that I think is just... it's always surprising to people. You know, it's the chocolate and a little hint of salt, and the peppercorns just a floral note.
And a beautiful color, too.
Indeed. Yeah, it's one of my favorite beers.
So... for this podcast, we're just talking about the holidays. We're kind of rounding it up nicely. Thank you for mentioning champagne, because we started off by talking about champagne. Next month, I would love to chat with you again, specifically about what's happening in the neighbor islands and here with brewing, so that people can get a really good understanding, whether they're coming to Hawaii for a visit or whether they live here. We have so much going on right now with brewing. It's incredible.
Yeah, I would love to talk about that stuff. Yeah, there's some great stuff happening, and you know, we're only a couple months away from beer festival season. You know, it kicks off in March with the Kona Beer Festival, and from there it's all the islands. So yeah, that sounds like a great talk.
We'll do it. Have a wonderful, wonderful holiday season. Enjoy your beers on New Year's Eve or your champagne. It was nice talking to you, Dave.
Yeah, always a pleasure. Thanks, Joe.
Okay, so there was Roberto with champagne, Dave Power with your beers. Hopefully that's got you sorted for the next couple of days. We'll see you next time on Radio Mojo. Hey, thanks for being with us. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. For more information, remember, go check out our website, mojomcgarry.com. We'll see you next time.